Part 3. The Gates of Death. 11. Traitor. For the sake of argument, suppose the conquest of Coruscant has caused casualties on an unimaginable scale. Suppose 10 billion people died in the Yuuzhan Vong bombardment. Suppose 20 billion more were killed in the ground quakes that accompanied the alteration of the planet's orbit. Suppose another 30 billion have since starved to death or been killed by Yuuzhan Vong's search-and-destroy teams, or have been poisoned, or eaten, or otherwise died from contact with Vong-formed life. Suppose an additional 40 billion have been enslaved or interred or otherwise held captive by the Yuuzhan Vong. These supposed numbers are exactly that. Pure supposition. Imaginary. Even when Coruscant's planetary database had been intact, the global census had been mostly guesswork. In the wake of the conquest, there was no practical way to number the missing and the dead. 100 billion is an unreasonably high figure, probably outrageously inflated. But even so, subtract these casualties from the pre-conquest population of Coruscant. There are 900 billion people left over. 900 billion. Survivors can be a weapon, too. The camp ships had been popping out of hyperspace for months now. No one could predict when or in what star system the next would arrive. The camp ships were kilometers thick, roughly globular, vast random glued-together masses of hexagonal chambers that ranged from the size of a footlocker to the size of a carrier's flight deck. The ships might have been some kind of plant, a vegetal species specially bred by the Yuuzhan Vong. They might have been agglomerate exoskeletons abandoned by gargantuan interplanetary animals. Analysis of sensor data showed clear indications of Dovenbasel-like gravity fields around the hyperspace exertion points. And, mere seconds after each ship's appearance, there would follow a new gravity-distorting burst. Some New Republic analysts thought these secondary bursts were Dovenbasels collapsing into self-generated point masses. Others claimed that the secondary bursts were the signatures of whatever Dovenbasel-like creatures had served as the engines of the camp ships, vanishing back into hyperspace to return to their starting point. This much was certain. These ships came at random, infalling through inhabited star systems. These ships had no food supplies, life support, or usable engines. All these ships had was people. Millions of people. Hundreds of millions. Survivors from the conquest of Coruscant. Each populated system that unexpectedly found itself the custodian of a camp ship faced a stark choice. It could further strain its war-burdened resources to house and feed the refugees, or it could let them die. Smother or starve, die of thirst, freeze, or slowly cook in their own waste heat. The ships could be simply ignored, left to drift between planets, frozen mausoleums eternally commemorating that stellar system's callous, lethal neglect of 100 million lives. No world of the New Republic could face collective guilt on that scale. If they could, they never would have been admitted to the Republic in the first place. No one knew if any camp ships had been jumped to uninhabited systems. No one wanted to think about that. Some Jedi explored, feeling with the Force through vast, dust-swept reaches. But there had never been many Jedi in the first place, and the few who remained had little time to spare from the war. Planetary and system-wide governments mounted no searches. They couldn't afford to. They didn't have the resources to support the refugees who had ended up in their laps already. To search for others would be not only useless, but insane. Despite painful shortages of both raw materials and technical expertise, the New Republic systems did what they could. To construct cities big enough to shelter hundreds of millions of people was clearly impossible in the wartime economy, but there was another option. The ships were roomy and held air against the vacuum of space. So the refugees were kept where they were, while the host systems did their best to supply the overcrowded ships with waste and water recycling, atmosphere scrubbing and replenishment, light and food. They became orbital refugee camps, hence the name. Life in the camp ships was hard. Even in the wealthiest systems, every camp ship's food had to be rationed at the brink of starvation. Even the best recyclers couldn't remove from the water the growing taste of having been used again and again. Cramped, dirty, stinking, atmosphere plants overloaded with sweat and breath and other variously noxious effluents of a thousand species, atmosphere saturated with enough carbon dioxide to give the entire population continuous thudding headaches. Those species, at least, that had heads. Even photosynthetics suffered, despite the oversupply of carbon dioxide, since they were forced to rely on dim, intermittent artificial light. Everyone suffered, and very, very few were allowed to leave. No one talked about the real reason the refugees were sequestered aboard the camp ships. It was this. Interplanetary space was the ideal sanitary cordon. Many worlds had received, courtesy of the Yuuzhan Vong, unpleasant surprises along with refugees allowed dirtside. All refugee populations included unguessable numbers of spies, saboteurs, peace brigaders, collaborators of all sorts, and sometimes worse. Ganna Reishout had spent weeks chasing the rumor. He'd heard it from a tramp navigator in a tavern on Tyr, who'd gotten it from a dock steward at the space yard on Rothana, who'd been talking to a freighter pilot on the Sisar run, who'd heard a casual mention from a customs inspector in the Servarkas system. Or maybe it was the Mantuin or Almania. The inspector had heard it from a friend in the fleet whose cousin was a civilian volunteer on the camp ship at Bathawi. Ganner had laboriously backtracked each link, chasing across what was left of the New Republic, through weeks in hyperspace and day after day after day of playing "Have You Seen?" with bored clerks and hostile freight loaders, suspicious bureaucrats and sarcastic corridor kids. By the time he reached the numbered curtain that passed for an apartment door inside the million-celled honeycomb of the camp ship, he was so tired he couldn't even remember what system he was in. The number on the curtain was in three parts, giving the coordinates of the chamber's location as measured from the center of the rough globe of the camp ship. In a ship lacking anything that resembled decks, or even straight lines, three-dimensional coordinates were the only practical addresses these chambers could have. This particular chamber was remote, nearly at the hull, on the side opposite that which the tide-locked ship turned toward the world it orbited. It was, as Ganner had rightly reflected when he had learned the chamber's coordinates, on the dark side. Ganner didn't look much like Ganner these days. Gone was the flashy blouse and tight leather trousers, the gleam of gold piping, the tall, immaculately polished boots. Instead, he wore a shapeless tunic of nondescript brown fabric over baggy gray leggings that hid his boots, now scuffed and bearing the dirt of dozens of worlds. Gone, too, was the devastating smile and the dashing glint in his clear blue eyes. He'd even let a scruffily curling beard muddy the clean, sharp lines of his classic jaw. This wasn't exactly a disguise. He'd made no secret of his identity. On the contrary, he wielded his identity as a weapon, to cut through tangled kilometers of bureaucratic red tape that would have kept him off the camp ships. But he was different as he could get from the Ganner he had always been. Being that old Ganner had done him far too much damage. Here, for example, outside the chamber, the old Ganner would have swept aside the curtain with a flourish and posed, dramatically backlit, in the doorway. He would have coolly announced himself and asked his questions, counting on his imposing height and intimidating glare, his reputation, and his sheer gutsy dash to bully out the answers he needed. Now, instead, he leaned back against the pebbly wall beside the door and let himself slide down. He settled in, sitting, as though he were just another refugee, taking a nap at the side of a corridor. He let his head drift forward and his eyes fall closed while he reached into the Force, seeking feelings from the chamber beyond. This could be a trap, and he was done with taking foolish chances. Caution was his byword now, and unobtrusiveness his best defense. He felt humans inside the chamber, with enough Force presence that there might have been 5 of them, as he'd been told there would be, by the harried data clerk who'd accessed their file on the temporary, obsolete and overloaded central server that held the sketchy records compiled by this camp ship's volunteer administrators. But Ganner couldn't quite resolve the Force sensation into distinct individuals. He frowned, squeezing his eyes more tightly shut, concentrating. It was almost as though inside this chamber there was one person with 5 different personalities, or that all 5 of them participated in some kind of group consciousness. That would be rare in humanity, but hardly impossible. The galaxy had spawned dozens, if not hundreds, of minor variations on the human theme. Ganner knew he hadn't seen them all. And the unknown, he had learned through bitter experience, was always dangerous, often deadly. His little half-joke about this chamber being on the dark side didn't seem funny anymore. He had a feeling he was about to get himself killed. He sighed and got up. From the moment he had begun chasing this rumor, he had sort of, somehow, half known he would end up like this. Alone, no backup, no one even knowing enough about where he was to mount a search for him when he did not return. It had taken him 2 days just to walk this deeply into the camp ship. No one would ever know what had happened to him. Well, one person would be able to guess, but he didn't think she'd care. He remembered the dark flame in Jaina's eyes when he'd told her of the rumor. "Another stupid lie," she'd said, "and you're an idiot for believing it." He'd tried to explain that he didn't actually believe the tale. He just thought it should be checked out. He'd tried to tell her how important this could be to the morale of the whole New Republic. "Don't you get it? He's a hero. It'd be like he rose from the dead, Jaina. It'd be magical. It'd be a miracle. It'd give us hope again." "We don't need hope," Jaina had told him. A grim set had hardened the once soft curve of her jaw ever since Mirkur. "We need more ships. We need better weapons. We need Jedi. We need to keep on fighting. We don't need you wasting everybody's time on fantasies." Ganner had persisted. "But what if it's not a fantasy? Your mother still claims he's alive." "My mother," Jaina had said, a slow ancient weight on her words, a weight too vast, too old for a teenage girl, "lost both her sons on the same day. She hasn't gotten over it. She probably never will." "She has a right to know." "I'm not arguing with you, Ganner. I'm telling you, keep your fat yap shut. I don't want anything about this getting back to Mom. To raise her hopes and then crush them again would break her. If you do, I'll break you." But, Jaina. She had leaned close to him then, and that dark flame in her eyes had burned so hot that Ganner took a step back. "Don't think I won't, Ganner. And don't think I can't." He didn't answer. He believed her. She said, "The Vaughn kept Jason alive after they captured him. For a long time. They kept him alive so they could hurt him. I could feel it. I never even told Mom and Dad what they put him through. What happened to Anakin, that was better. That was clean." Tears had sparked in her eyes, but her voice was hard enough to cut transparasteel. "I felt Jason die. In one instant, he was just gone. Blasted out of existence like he'd never existed at all. I felt it. If he were alive, I wouldn't need you to come and tell me about it. I'd know." Her hands had clenched to fists, white-knuckled, pressed against her sides, and her lips drew back over her teeth. Don't talk to me about this garbage ever again. And don't talk to anyone else either. Anyone. If I find out you've so much as looked in a mirror and told yourself, I will hurt you. I will teach you things about pain that no one should ever have to learn. Ganner had stood and stared, gaping, dumbstruck at the hurt, and the pure black rage that beat against him through the force. What had happened to her? There had been some rumors. "Hey, Jaina, it's okay," he'd said. "I won't tell anybody, I promise. Don't get mad. I am not mad. You haven't seen mad. You better hope you never do." She had folded her arms and turned her back to him. "Get out of my sight." Ganner had walked unsteadily away, shaken. Jaina had always held herself so together, had always been so competent, so in control, that it had been easy to forget that she'd lost both her brothers that day, too. Had lost her twin, the brother who'd been half of all she was. Later, much later, he reflected, "Well, you know, I only promised I wouldn't talk about it. I never promised I wouldn't look into it." That was when he had set out, alone. The old Ganner might have done the same, he occasionally thought with a certain melancholy resignation. It would have made a great story, a story about the kind of Jedi Ganner had always wanted to be, a lone hero, searching the vast reaches of the galaxy on a quest he cannot share, braving unimaginable dangers and facing incalculable odds. That had been Ganner's fantasy self, the cool, calm, dangerous hero, the kind people trade stories about in voices hushed with awe and all that adolescent crap. Vanity, that's what it was. Pure vanity. Vanity had always been Ganner's fatal weakness. Nothing wrong with being a hero. Look at Han Solo or Corran Horn. Nothing wrong with wanting to be a hero. Luke Skywalker often talked about his youthful dreams of adventure, and look how he turned out. But when you start trying to be a hero, you're in a whole galaxy of trouble. Lust for glory can become a sickness, a disease that Bacta cannot cure. In its final stages, it's all you can think about. At the end, you don't even care about actually being a hero. You just want people to think you are. The old Ganner Isode had suffered from that style-over-substance disease. He'd had as bad a case as any he'd ever seen. It had nearly killed him. Worse, it had nearly driven him dark. In unguarded moments, he still found himself drifting back to those dangerous dreams. Just thinking about it could give him the shudders. He had worked very hard to squeeze his lust for the admiration of others into a small, quiet voice, and he hoped one day to silence it forever. So he had set about his quest quietly, inconspicuously, anonymously, making sure the tale did not spread. He had to be sure he was doing this for the right reasons. He had to be sure he wasn't suffering a relapse into the glory sickness. He had to be sure he chased this rumor only because it was the right thing to do. Because the New Republic desperately needed any glimmer of hope. Because Jaina did. Every time he remembered that dark flame in what had once been soft brown eyes, he felt another blow on a spike driving into his chest. Flirting with the dark, sure, lots of Jedi had, since the war's beginning. Some had even claimed it was the galaxy's only hope. At the Mirker worldship, the strike team had discussed it seriously, as an option. But it was one thing for, say, a Kip Duron to talk about the dark. He was a creature of tangled hostility and self-loathing, always had been. The incredible brutality of his childhood, and the unimaginable crimes it had driven him to commit, had twisted him to where holding on to the light was a struggle for him every single day. It was another thing for young Jedi, in a desperate situation, to debate using dark side power. For Jaina Solo to look in his eye and threaten his life was something entirely different. It hurt him. Hurt him worse than he would ever have guessed it could. The Solo kids were supposed to be invulnerable. They were the galaxy's new generation of legends, the clean, pure hope of the Jedi. Doing the right thing came naturally for them. It always had. They had been, were supposed to be, happy warriors of the Force. All three of them had already, without even trying, been exactly the kind of heroes Ganner had nearly killed himself trying to imitate. They'd been born for it. But now Anakin and Jason were dead, and Jaina... Jaina was making Ganner frighteningly aware that she was the granddaughter of Darth Vader. What hurt him the worst? There was nothing he could do about it. Well, no, that's not entirely true, Ganner thought as he slowly heaved himself to his feet in the camp ship corridor. There is one thing I can do. Maybe, just barely possibly, she had lost only one brother. Jason could be alive. Maybe Ganner could prove it. Maybe he could even find him. It might not save her, but it would have to help. And if he failed, well, no harm done. She had no hopes left to crush. Ganner nodded to himself, then leaned close to the curtain that served as the chamber's door. "Excuse me," he called softly. "Hello? Does anybody here speak basic?" "Go away." The voice that answered from beyond the curtain sounded oddly, vaguely, just barely, familiar. "There is nothing for you here." The feeling he'd had, that he was about to get himself killed, swelled into an overwhelming premonition of doom. Ganner's knees went weak, and a very large part of him wanted to bolt down the corridor and get away. But though he hadn't been much of a hero, the one virtue he'd never had to fake was courage. He took another deep breath. The hand he lifted to pull aside the curtain trembled just a little, and he stared at it until it stilled. Then he gently tugged a gap between the curtain and the wall. "I'm sorry to intrude," he said. "I won't bother you for long. I just have a question for you. One question, that's all, and then I'll leave you alone." From inside, a middle-aged, heavy-set human stared at him stonily. "Go away." "In a moment I will," Ganner said apologetically, "but I understand that someone who lives here claims he saw Jason Solo alive on Coruscant after the invasion. Can I talk to whomever that might be?" From what little he could see beyond the curtain, there seemed to be only one or two small rooms beyond, and almost no possessions of any kind. The man who blocked his path wore only a long, shapeless white tunic, almost like a loose robe. The others within, all men, were identical garments. Some kind of religious thing? Ganner wondered, because they all had some kind of aura in common, a similar way of carrying themselves, similar posture or some such, that you sometimes see among members of fanatic cults. Or maybe it's just poverty and desperation. "I can pay," he offered. "There's nothing for you here," the man repeated. One of the others moved up behind the man's left shoulder and gestured toward the lightsaber that hung from Ganner's belt. He grumbled something in a guttural tongue that Ganner couldn't understand. "Not everyone who carries that weapon is a Jedi," the man replied without shifting his blankly hostile stare from Ganner's face. "Be silent." Again Ganner was struck by some weirdly familiar resonance in the voice, though he knew he'd never seen this man before. Somehow he thought this voice should be higher, fresher, more cheerful. He shook his head. He'd worry about that later. He might not be the best sabacc player in the galaxy, but he knew when to turn his cards face up. "I am a Jedi," he said quietly. "My name is Ganner Isod. I have come to inquire about Jason Solo. Which one of you saw him alive?" "You are mistaken. No one here saw anything. You had better go." One of the others stepped forward and said something that sounded like Shinulfek Jedi Trismek. "Silence," the man snapped over his shoulder. Hairs prickled up the back of Ganner's neck, but his expression remained only politely curious. "Please," he said, "tell me what you know." He reached out through the force to nudge a little cooperation out of this man, and awoke to find himself jogging away down the passage, with no memory of having turned aside, no idea how he'd gotten there. "What?" he thought blankly. "What?" Dizzily, blurrily, he worked it out. That guy back there could use the force, could use it as well as the most powerful of Jedi. That middle-aged, average-looking man had brushed aside Ganner's probe and blasted back with a force compulsion so strong that even though Ganner knew what it was, it continued to drive his legs in a staggering lope away from the chamber. He wrenched himself to a stop, gasping, leaning on the pebble-textured wall. The dread he'd felt had vanished. It must have been a force projection as well, subtle, undetectable. Now, too late, he wished he had broken his promise to Jaina and brought along a dozen Jedi for backup, because now he felt from the chamber behind him only one presence in the force. One alone. Of the other four in there, he felt nothing at all. His lightsaber appeared in his hand and its blade snapped to life. "You're not the only one who can play games with the force," he thought, grinning, feeling for a moment the old rush, the familiar buzz of happy anticipation with which he'd always faced sudden danger. In the old days. "Leave that Ganner behind," he told himself. He released the activation plate and his blade vanished. "I'm not like that. I'm cautious. Cautious and unobtrusive." Slowly, gradually, he began to withdraw from the force, shutting down his force presence as though he were still moving away. This left him force blind, but also force invisible. He crept back toward the chamber, moving silently along the passage wall. A powerful force user in the camp ship, along with what were very probably masked Yuuzhan Vong. And this force user had knowingly blown his cover when he'd put the compulsion on Ganner. In mere minutes, he could disappear forever into the anonymous millions who crowded the immense ship. Ganner had heard the stories from Yavin 4. He knew that the Yuuzhan Vong had been trying to turn Jedi to their service. If they had finally succeeded, the consequences would be literally incalculable. He was in over his head, way over his head. But what else could he do? "This guy's stronger than I am." Cold dread prickled up his arms, and this time it wasn't any force projection. It was the real thing. And there are five of them. I really am going to get myself killed. But he kept moving, creeping along the wall, silent lightsaber loose in his tingling hand. How could he not? He could imagine all too well trying to explain to Skywalker, actually, I didn't do anything about the Jedi traitor and the Yuuzhan Vong infiltrators because of, because of how, I'd be really embarrassed if people thought I got killed because I was playing hero again. He choked off the thought. He was at the chamber door, and his force trick wouldn't fool this guy for more than another second or two. No time to plan. Barely time to act. "No killing," he told himself. "Not until I'm sure they're Vong." With a sigh, he relaxed the mental tension that had held him outside the force. Perception flooded him, and in its surge he felt the force user within the chamber blaze like a homing beacon in an asteroid belt. Ganner flowed into action without thinking, just moving, his blade sizzling to life, slashing away the curtain's fastenings, gathering it as it fell, bagging the head of the nearest white robe while he kicked a second aside. He faked another low-line kick and leapt high, whipping an overhand right to crash the handle of his lightsaber onto the top of a third's head, hard enough to drive him to his knees, then used him like a pommel horse, vaulting his legs high for a double kick that flattened the fourth like he'd been shot with a bowcaster. He whirled back to the first just as the white robe managed to claw the curtain off his head and dropped him with an elbow across the jaw. He felt motion behind him, and sprang into a force-assisted backflip that spun him high and wide and ended with him in a perfectly balanced stance one arm's length from the middle-aged man, the tip of his lightsaber's blade half a centimeter from the hollow of the man's throat. "Nobody's dead and nobody's hurt," Ganner said coolly, voice as even as his lightsaber's hum. "But that can change. Any time. It's your call." The four force-invisible white robes, scattered around the small chamber off balance or off their feet entirely, hesitated. The middle-aged man stood motionless. Ganner couldn't restrain the hint of a smile. "Not only am I good at this," he thought reflexively, "I do it with style." He squashed the thought the instant it registered, exasperated with himself. "Just when I think I'm making progress." He gathered his caution in layers, like body armor. "All right," he said, calm, quiet, and slow. He held the eye of the middle-aged man and twitched the lightsaber. Within the red-rimmed shadows, cast upward on his face by the blade's yellow glow, the man's stare was as stony as ever. "Back up. Toward the door." The man's stare softened into something like resignation, and he shook his head in sad refusal. "I'm not bluffing," Ganner said. "You and I are going to have a talk in the corridor. As long as nobody does something stupid, there's no reason why we shouldn't all live through this. Now move." Another twitch of the lightsaber, enough to shave a micrometer of skin off the man's collarbone, and the man only sighed. "Ganner, you dope." Ganner licked his lips. "He says that like he knows me." "You don't seem to understand. You're the one who doesn't understand," the man said tiredly. "We're being watched. Right now. If I so much as step outside this chamber, a Yuuzhan Vong pilot watching us will trigger a Dovan Basal concealed not very far from here. It will take all of 10 seconds for this whole ship to collapse into a quantum black hole. 100 million people will die." Ganner's mouth dropped open. "What? How? I mean, why would—" "Because they don't trust me yet," he said sadly. "You shouldn't have come back, Ganner. Now you can't leave this room alive." "I got in easily enough. Getting out is different. And even if you do get away, knowing only what you know already—" "If I get away. Who's holding the lightsaber here?" "It's not a bluff, Ganner. I only wish it was." Ganner could hear the conviction in his voice, and in the force he felt truth behind his words. "But I already know he's stronger than me. He could be faking the truth I'm feeling, and I'd never know it. And even if it were true, he couldn't get any of this to make sense. He couldn't begin to guess what might actually be going on, or what he should be doing about it." "I'm telling you this," the man went on, "because the same thing will happen if I am killed, in case my conscience tempts me to sacrifice myself. As I said, they don't trust me yet." But, Ganner sputtered. That feeling of being in over his head thickened. He was drowning in it. Taking a two-handed grip on his lightsaber to keep the blade from trembling, he tried to recover control of the situation. "All I want," he said almost plaintively, "is to hear what you know about Jacen Solo. Start talking, or I'll have to take the chance that you're bluffing." The man looked at Ganner like he knew him, like he'd known him for years, like he saw through him with the melancholy perception of a disappointed parent. Again he sighed. "Talking won't help." "You don't have a choice. There's always a choice." Slowly, deliberately, without any hint of a threatening speed, he lifted a hand. He pressed a spot on the side of his nose, and his face split in half. Ganner took an involuntary step back. The man's face peeled open like the rind of an Ithurian bloodfruit, thick meaty flaps pulling away from each other, taking with them his thinning lank hair, the defeated pouches under his eyes, the jowls that had thickened his jawline. A network of hair-thin filaments slowly retracted from the pores of the face, revealed beneath, leaking blood. Beneath the retracting masker, the face Ganner saw was thin, chiseled, fringed with a raggedly scruffy beard, topped with blood-matted hair that might have been brown. Even through the streaks of blood and the distortion caused by the withdrawal of the masker's feeder filaments, Ganner knew this face. Though it was a face too old, too lined with privation and pain, set with eyes too sadly experienced to be the face he knew it was. Ganner's mouth dropped open. His fingers loosened as his hands fell to his sides. His lightsaber's blade vanished, and the handle clattered on the floor. When he could finally speak, the only word that could pass through his nerveless mouth was, "Jason." "Hi, Ganner," Jason said tiredly. He reached into his sleeve and withdrew a small pouch, which he teased open, turning it inside out as he drew it over his hand like a mitten, revealing a small fabric pad that had been inside the pouch. He tossed it to Ganner. "Here, catch." Ganner was too astonished to do anything other than catch it reflexively. The pad was damp to his touch and warm with Jason's body heat. "Jason? What's going on?" Numbness gathered in the center of his palm and began to climb his wrist. He frowned down at the pad in his hand. "What is this?" "The tears of a friend of mine," Jason said. "They're a contact poison." "What?" He stared. "You're kidding, right? I don't have much sense of humor these days." Jason peeled the pouch off his hand and tossed it aside. "You'll be unconscious in about 15 seconds. Ganner's hand was already dead, and his right arm hung limp. The numbness washed into his chest, and when it touched his heart, it shot throughout his body. He pitched forward, unable even to lift an arm to break his fall, but Jason caught him and lowered him gently to the floor. "Wake the Villip," Jason said to one of the others. "Yuuzhan Vong warriors," Ganner now knew they must be. "Tell Numanor that our trap has failed. Other Jedi will follow this one. We must return home." "Numanor? Return home?" Ganner thought as darkness closed in around his mind. "They've done it. They got Jason. They've turned him." One of the warriors barked in their harsh tongue. Jason shook his head. "No, we'll take him with us." Cough, hack, snarl. "Because I say so," Jason answered. "Do you dare dispute my word?" With a final convulsion of his will, Ganner reached out through the Force and seized his lightsaber, lifting it with his mind, squeezing its activation plate to snap the blade to sizzling life. One of the warriors barked a warning in their guttural tongue. Jason gestured, and Ganner felt a stronger mind than his take hold of the lightsaber and wrench it from his control. The lightsaber's blade vanished. The hand grip bobbed gently in the air between Jason and the warriors. "Do not soil yourself by touching the blasphemous weapon," Jason said. The last thing Ganner saw as darkness swallowed him was an amphistaff snaking out from Jason Solo's sleeve to slice the handle of Ganner's lightsaber neatly in half. "We will take this pathetic excuse for a Jedi to Yuuzhan Tarr," Jason Solo said. "Then we'll kill him." Inside a camp ship, a chamber moved. This chamber had been grown specially, bred into this particular camp ship for this particular purpose. It had appeared to be just another chamber within the million-celled honeycomb, but now it cast itself loose and slid along under the camp ship's hull, like a parasite digging its way out through an animal's skin. This particular chamber enclosed a pod of Yorick coral that had its own Dovin basil. This Dovin basil could have been used in either of two ways. With one command, it could have generated a gravity field intense enough to crush the entire camp ship into a point mass smaller than a grain of sand. But it had been given the other command, and so it would drive the chamber and its occupants across the galaxy. The skin of the camp ship developed a small boil. This boil bulged on the ship's dark side. When it burst, it spat forth the chamber, which instantly streaked away, accelerating frantically into hyperspace, heading for Yuuzhan Tarr. Within that chamber were four warriors of the Yuuzhan Vong, one pilot within the coral pod, and two humans. One of the humans sat in silent meditation. The other lay paralyzed, unconscious. But even in the dark void, where he seemed to float, he held on to one thought. He didn't know where he was being taken. He didn't know what would happen to him. He didn't even know, really, who he was. He knew only one thing. This was the one lone thought to which he gave all his strength, to fix it forever in his memory. Jason Solo is a traitor.